welcome to a special episode of AU Manufacturing Conversations with Brent Belinsky, featuring one of the companies we're putting forward as part of our quest to identify and celebrate Australia's 50 most innovative manufacturers for 2024. This campaign has been made possible through the generous support of MYOB, the original business management software developers, nothing beats the OG, as well as the CSIRO, the New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility, and the Commonwealth Bank. So Heather, lovely to have you finally on the program. Good to be at your digs, and welcome to AU Manufacturing Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
So the first question, as always, is how did you get here and what do you make?
So I came through academia. So I was at the University of New South Wales for a little bit of time, and in that role as a researcher lecturer, I was involved in some projects that invented the technology that we've now spun out into Contactile. And basically what that is tactile sensors that give robots a human sense of touch and enables them to be dexterous.
I might ask you to expand on some of those things. How did you go from being a researcher who has a nifty bit of IP that you helped develop to taking that out of a university into a business? Why did you decide to do that? Something of the company's origin story, please.
So that was quite a journey. So we were quite fortunate at the university to have multiple rounds of research grants. And so we took the technology, or at least the proof of concept, kind of as far as we could within the research environment. And as kind of we approached the end of one of the grants, we were obviously have to disclose to the university if there's any inventions and if, you know, they have any potential commercial value. And in that process, kind of discovered that there actually was some interest from investors, and, you know, that there is a big gap in the technology space and the capability space that we could actually, you know, fit. And so we decided to, without, you know, taking too much risk, I suppose, is we did an accelerator program. So while we were still at the university and in the comfort of our, you know, secure jobs and everything, attend some of these accelerator programs and discover, you know, what does that actually mean? How do you commercialize technology from a university research lab? And it was like drinking from a fire hydrant. So we were exposed to so much, like we didn't realize how naive we were until we'd done those programs. And it just kind of, you know, towards the end of some of those programs, we got excited.
Right, I heard that.
It was just like, yeah, just take a step off the cliff, right?
Right, why not? On Prime was an important one of those accelerator programs. What did you get out of that?
So it was the On Accelerate. Was cancelled for a few years and I think it's back again. So that was our first accelerator program. And it was like having been blind and being gifted this, you know, sense of sight for the first time. It was just so overwhelming, and a lot of the stuff wasn't necessarily relevant to the stage that we were at, because they expose you to a lot of broad topics and things like that. But seeing it and being able to, I guess, lock that away in your memory vault for, you know, to be pulled out at a later time, that was really helpful, because you don't know what you don't know. So that at least we became aware of what we didn't know.
Yeah, it's an important step. Yeah. And was part of that talking to potential customers? Is that?
Yeah, so that's a big part of that program was, you know, they really encourage you to talk to at least 100 customers during the program. And I think we're still talking to customers. Like, it never stops. If you're not listening to your customers, then you're not making things for your customers. And in that case, who are you making it for? Because they're not going to buy it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned this technology you've developed at university that was at quite a raw stage. Tell me about the optical-based sensors and what are the smarts behind that?
So we measure touch, which is a physical force being applied to our sensors using light. And so basically what we're doing is we're tracking some light as a piece of silicone deforms. So the force that's applied deforms the silicone moves the light, and we basically just track the light. So it's pretty simple, and that technique has actually been used in a number of different applications. Like, tracking light is used in a number of different applications. It's used, for example, to orient satellites in space using the sun as the reference point. It's also used to align optic fiber cables and things like that. So, you know, pass light through the optic fiber and you align it by looking at where the light is hitting. So we've just taken something that already existed and packaged it in a way that's actually useful for measuring touch. And when I say touch, people think of pressure, but there's actually a lot more to it than just pressure. Components of touch that we measure are forces in three dimensions. So if you're pushing something in and out, but you can also move it left and right and forwards and backwards, so all three dimensions. And we also measure torque, which is kind of, if you think, forces that are generated through rotations. And we also measure slipperiness. And so the slipperiness part of it, that's the most important thing that differentiates us from other companies that develop tactile sensors. Because basically, if you don't know how slippery something is, you don't know how hard to grip it. So if you think about, you know, when you pick up an oily glass, a dirty oily glass, yep, versus a squeaky clean glass, and we use the word squeaky clean because it's friction, that's, yep, the slipperiness, right? It's very non-slippery versus the oily one. So the oily one, you've got to grip it much harder, even though the glass is identical. But the clean one, you grip it much gentler.
It seems like a really simple way of doing something that is deceptively complex in the way that humans touch and grasp and manipulate and everything going on. Tell me a bit about why it's so complex, please, and how hard it is to, I guess, reverse engineer what's going on.
So what's really challenging about, so the end goal being dexterity. And if you think about all the different ways that we use our hands, even just in day-to-day living, you know, we pick up pieces of fruit, we open doors, we hold tools to like brush our teeth or hold a pen, or, you know, we do a lot of things with our hands. And something that the community at large has been focused on is trying to replicate the degrees of freedom of the human hand, because, you know, we can grab things in many different ways. Like the way you hold a pen is very different to the way you hold a hammer. So kind of trying to replicate the mechanics of that has been a large focus of the kind of robotics community at large, but there hasn't been, I guess, enough on the tactile feedback part of it because it's just not available. So vision has been available for a long time. You've got cameras, you've got LiDAR, you've got all these different ways to visualize what's happening in a scene. And so a lot of companies and researchers have relied on vision as the only form of sensory feedback. So have I picked it up? Yes, I can see it moving, therefore all good, but there's a lot of stuff that you just simply can't see.
Slipperiness, for example.
Slipperiness being one. But even something as simple as how much does an object weigh, right? Like I can train a model to guess how much something weighs based on previous historical data, but I can't actually know how much it weighs just by looking at it. So how much does something weigh? Where is its center of mass? So imagine if you're picking up a cardboard box. You can't see what's inside. It's a closed cardboard box unless you've got x-ray. Even if you can see what's inside, how's the mass distributed? If there's two items in the box, one at the left end of the box, one at the right end of the box, if one of them is heavier than the other, then the center of mass of that box is going to be skewed in one direction. And so even that kind of information is really important because that will dictate how we lift the box. And then, yeah, the last thing, as you mentioned, is slipperiness. You can't see how slippery something is. So those are the things that we're addressing by using tactile sensors.
Are there research groups in the world and companies in the world looking at a similar problem in a similar way, or are you sort of on your own here?
So there's a few different research labs that are investigating tactile feedback. There's not a lot that are developing tactile sensors. So they're kind of either simulating tactile feedback or they're using existing sensors to try and get that tactile feedback. As far as we know, we're the only ones that have specifically focused on how to measure slipperiness. So there's lots of other, as I said, like pressure sensing, for example, that's kind of been around for a long time and people, you know, have been using that, but pressure doesn't tell you how slippery something is. It doesn't even tell you how much something weighs unless you put it on top of the pressure sensor, but we don't usually grip like that. We grip on the sides. So we're quite unique in the way that we've positioned ourselves. There are other companies that try and solve the tactile problem by having really dense arrays of pressure sensors so that when there's even a slight movement, you can see that as a shift in the contact area on the sensor. And so by doing that, it's kind of a proxy for if something is slipping or how slippery it is, because it will move faster if it's slippery. But, you know, that requires a lot more computation because you've got a large number of sensing elements.
You're making it more complex.
Yeah. So It's an approach. It may prove fruitful. We've just gone a different way.
We'd like to take another moment now to acknowledge our sponsors, MYOB, as well as the CSIRO, New South Wales Government's Advanced Manufacturing Research Facility, and the Commonwealth Bank. There would be no 50 Most Innovative without these guys. Thanks again for making this campaign possible.
And dexterity, what is a sort of stage of development? There are some different ways to try and make a robot dexterous, I suppose. What are the current limitations that you see in robots that might be in a factory or out in whatever? What are some limitations to dexterity, please?
So I think dexterity can be solved. There's two components. There's the mechanics and then there's the sensing. And I believe that you can get very far with very simple mechanics and good sensing. So a lot of companies, and it's very prominent in the media at the moment, attempting the human form factor, and you know, humanoids are very hyped up at the moment. Whether or not we actually need that, I'm not sure. I won't speculate.
I don't think you make anything more useful by making it look like a human. It's like, if you want to have a thing that does a job, why would you sort of make a promise that you can't deliver on in that it's going to be a human? Like, why do you need that? Why does it need legs, which are hard to make move? Why can't it just be on wheels?
Yeah, exactly. So in a warehouse environment, for example, warehouses are made in a way that they're accessible by forklift, by, you know, a bunch of different things with wheels. So a robot in a warehouse doesn't necessarily need legs because the warehouse is structured in a way that wheels will do. So there is a question about that. I have to assume that these companies that are building humanoids obviously have much further reaching, you know, goals and milestones, not just in the warehouse. That's just where they happen to start. But yeah, I believe you can get away with quite simple mechanics as long as you give a decent sense of touch. Mm-hmm. So when I say simple mechanics, even a two-finger gripper with and without tactile sensing is the difference between, you know, just being a pick and place thing for known objects to something that can, you know, actually open a door or fold laundry, to use your example from earlier. So taking it from just a very simple mechanical setup into something that's actually useful, is tactile sensing is the missing link there.
So what are you selling at the moment? You're selling... Well, I'll let you tell.
So we sell a couple of development kits for different sensors that we have. So basically you get a couple of sensors and the controller and some software that goes with it. And basically that's for, you know, evaluation or for research, where you can actually integrate the sensors into your own system. We're at the moment putting together, I'm hoping, the final version of a robotic gripper with our sensors already integrated into it and the closed loop control. So that will kind of be a plug and play end effector for various cobots, like universal robots. And we hope to kind of expand the gripper offering in different forms, so different mechanisms, so angular or linear or two finger or three finger or more, but also, you know, different stroke lengths and different grip strengths and all that kind of spec.
Design for manufacturing and making these pads that you're using, making them in a way that can be done over and over again. How has that been as a challenge?
It's tough. So we've got a number of, like, obviously different components in the sensors. So we have the electronics, and electronics is pretty much kind of a solved problem. You can give that to anybody and they can build you the electronics. We've got the housing of the sensor, which is like a metal rigid frame, I suppose, and that's also fairly solved problem. What we are finding a little bit challenging is actually the silicone. We have to have a deformable material in our sensors. And so having a deformable material that has to interface with a rigid material. So there's the process of how do you make sure that bond is strong. But there's also a lot of optical features in our silicone. And silicone isn't typically used in that way. So finding a manufacturer that we can communicate our requirements to and can give us a good result has been a little bit of a challenge, actually.
Are you working with many Australian companies as partners for, you know, manufacturing, testing, demoing, etc.?
So we've reached out to a few manufacturers locally to try and solve the silicone thing. One of the challenges that we found is because we're so small and because what we're attempting is so, let's call it different, it can be very easy to just, you know, put us in the too hard basket. Because it's not obvious that, you know, where the reward will be for the manufacturer.
Tiny volumes for a very difficult customer is not a great way to spend your time.
So, yeah, so we're not doing, I guess, a good job of selling the potential of what this could be. So we haven't had much luck in that respect. But we're working with other systems integrators locally to get feedback. Yeah, lots of feedback on, like, for example, our sensors and grippers and applications as well. So, you know, these systems integrators have a lot of experience interfacing different robotics components together for solving customer problems. So they will see, you know, all of the pitfalls, for example, of a certain design or a certain, for example, cable routing. Like, oh no, I wouldn't route it like that because that's going to get caught on XYZ equipment or in these scenarios and things like that. So we've been kind of using our network of friendly local systems integrators to get as much feedback on the practicalities of actually deploying a robotic end effector in a real application.
That's the business side. Are you collaborating with any universities? You're a university spin-out. You presumably still have pretty good relations with UNSW and some others around the place. Are you using any outside researchers to help?
We're trying to. So there's a few different grants available for industry-university collaboration. We have not yet been successful in getting any of those grants, but we continue to try. I mean, we're looking not just at kind of immediate term or medium term, but long term as well. So anything that can just kind of be running in the background for us in collaboration with the university is great because it makes it easier to pull the trigger when we need to. So, yeah, we're trying.
Right. And what's the size of your team currently?
So we're 6 full-time and we have a number of interns as well. We've been very active on accepting engineering interns. They like to think that they enjoy working with us.
How could they not?
Yeah, they keep coming back, so yeah.
And so you've mentioned above a few different applications. We've touched on laundromats, warehousing, and agriculture is in the mix. What do you see as the most promising of all those settings for what you're doing?
So I think where we see the most pull from the market is around e-commerce fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So largely where automation is used, it tends to be like a suction gripper.
Yep.
But suction is not suitable for a lot of different products. One of the biggest no-nos is fresh produce. So, you know, you can't use suction to pick up a head of lettuce, right? So that kind of complex structure and, you know, and the fragility or the lack of structural integrity of fresh produce can be a real challenge for automation. So that's something I think that will be quite interesting and where there is that actual current demand. Because, yeah, to automate any order fulfillment in a grocery kind of environment, you're typically only dealing with maybe, and I'm guessing this number, but let's say 50 to 70% of the SKUs. And it's not actually a good return on investment in that case because you still need to have all this manual labor available to pick the rest of the products. So that's, yeah, that's where we're seeing a lot of interest, but also it's very slow. Because as you can imagine, it's not going to be the, you know, the family-owned local fruit market that's going to be the first to deploy this, you know, system. It's going to be the supermarket chains, and they typically are quite
bureaucratic.
Very long timelines to get to some kind of a trial. Even talking to the right person can take a year or two to find the right person in the company.
We're talking, as you guys have satisfyingly agreed to be a part of our Australia's 50 Most Innovative campaign, and thank you for that. In line with that, I'd like to hear your personal definition of innovation, if you have one.
I don't know if it's a personal definition, but innovation to me is, I think it's not accepting that this is the way we've always done it. Like, to me, that's actually one of the, like, it's a trigger for me when someone responds to something with, well, this is the way we've always done it, or we're not going to change what we currently do. So, yeah, that's, to me, innovation is the opposite of that.
Yep.
Not a very articulate
No, that's a pretty,
that's what it means to me.
Pretty good stab at it, I would submit. How can you get in touch if you're a company in Australia or elsewhere who wants to work with Contactile, who might be interested in what you do? How do they go about that?
very easy. There's a contact form on our website, www.contactile.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Twitter. I succumbed very recently and joined TikTok.
Oh, no.
let's say that we have a Contactile TikTok account. So find me through anything and just shoot me a message, and I'm fairly responsive. So, yeah.
And lastly, the closing question we like to ask guests is, what's an issue within manufacturing that isn't getting the attention it deserves currently? How would you answer?
I think it is catering to small businesses. So the manufacturers themselves are also small to medium businesses. And so they obviously they've got to keep lights on. And so they're chasing as much as they can the bigger contracts and things like that. And that's where kind of the manufacturing communities has sort of failed us at this stage of our company, because we don't represent that big contract. And I said, it's a too hard basket, and there's no real promise of a big contract later. So why would someone waste their time doing that?
Yep.
So I think, I don't know what the solution is, but maybe if there is some kind of like maybe incentivizing small business to help small business. I don't know what that looks like.
I've heard weirder proposals.
Okay.
Well, you're always told that we need to do a better job collaborating and networking, and one of the ways that you address a problem is by talking about it, so that's what we're doing. I believe that's everything I wanted to ask you, Heber, so thanks very much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on AU Manufacturing Conversations.
Thank you very much.